There was a good chance that something would notice an attempt to access the hoist. There was a low hiss of pistons, and the double blast doors pulled wide. The hoist space beyond was a bare metal box, but free of the creep of rust and grime that marked the lower decks. Ninkara stepped in and twitched the hawks off their perches in the piping above. They flitted within and settled amongst the latticework covering the ceiling. She keyed the code for the exit point that the ensign had given her, and pressed the dead officer's ring against the controls. Amber lights flickered for an instant, and then flashed red. Ninkara raised the ring to try again. Blinking, she wondered if someone had found the corpse, if the officer's clearance codes had been rescinded, if there was already a security servitor staring at a warning light on its console and reading an intrusion response.
"Hold it!"
The voice echoed down the corridor. Feet rang on the metal decking. Ninkara spiked her will into the hawks above her as her hand slid around the pommel of her shard blade.
"Hold!"
She tensed, ready to snap the blade out and cut in a single movement. A figure ran into sight and across the threshold.
"My thanks,"
panted an officer in the black and red uniform of a household officer. The woman was breathing hard. Ninkara relaxed the muscles poised to draw the blade, but kept her hand on the pommel behind her back. The officer blinked, looked at the flashing red light on the hoist control panel, and then up at Ninkara.
"You put in the wrong code, or did the ghost in the spirit decide to say no again?"
"I..." began Ninkara.
"No matter,"
said the household officer, and pressed her ring into the control panel. It went green.
"Nothing has been the same in the last few days. I hear it's something to do with the storm, like it followed us out into this backwater. Ghosts and system failures all over the place. Exit code?"
Ninkara spoke it, and the officer punched it in, then her own. A second later the doors closed, and the hoist began to lurch upwards.
"What station are you reporting to?"
asked the officer, after a few minutes of clanking quiet.
"Primary Medicaid,"
said Ninkara. The officer frowned.
"Reporting for duty there, or reporting with malady?"
Ninkara shaped her will and sent a barb out into the other woman's mind. The officer flinched and squeezed her eyes shut for a moment.
"Are you all right, ma'am?"
asked Ninkara.
Yes, just a pain." "A lot of that recently," said Ninkara, saying out loud something she had seen in the woman's thoughts. "Since the last passage through the storm."
"Yes," said the officer, still blinking. The hoist lurched to a halt. The control panel flashed amber, waiting for authorization to open the doors.
"Would you mind?" asked Ninkara, gesturing at the door. "I doubt the spirit has forgiven me yet."
"Yes," said the officer, wincing.
"Yes, of course."
She pressed the ring into the controls again. Lights snapped green, and the doors opened. Ninkara sent another pulse into the woman's thoughts, so that she squeezed her eyes shut for long enough that the hawks could glide out of the doors. She stepped after them, paused, and looked back.
"My thanks,"
she said. The officer nodded, still blinking with pain. Then the door shut, and Ninkara looked around at the heart of the Von Castellan domain.
"Do I need to be conscious?" asked Cleander.
Iaso paused and tilted her head, as though giving his question careful consideration.
"No, you don't, but part of what I am attempting is very delicate, and one of the few ways I will have of knowing if I have gone too far is if you tell me."
"If I really scream, you mean?"
"If you like."
"Just one more time. Is there any alternative to all this?"
"The alternative of letting whatever your Aldari friends put in you continue to activate and do unknown things to your biology. Yes, there is that alternative."
He did not reply. He was face down on a steel slab. Runnels ran across the polished metal, presumably for blood. His face was stuck through a rubber-lined hole, so that all he could see was the white-tiled floor and the coiled pipes of various chirurgical machines. ISO had let him keep mobility in his face and vocal cords, but for the duration of the operation he would not be able to move another muscle. Even his breathing and heart would be stopped, those functions being taken up by the devices that ringed the theatre.
"Ready?"
asked Iaso, looking down at him with her carbuncle eyes. She had set a mirror on a stand under the slab so that he could see her. He had a feeling it was supposed to be reassuring.
"Why not?"
he said, and forced a grin.
"Very well. Last nerve infusion proceeding now."
He saw a needle-tipped servo arm extend over Iaso's shoulder and then glide down. He felt it slide into his neck, and then a sensation like ice water running down his spine.
"Attaching sanguinary piping to vascular plugs now?"
He heard cables snap and lock into the socket plug she had fitted into his side.
"Injecting cardioparalysis venom now."
His heart stopped. For a second, he had the sensation of feeling silence in his chest. The breath stopped in his throat. The low buzz of the machinery filled his senses. He had the strangest feeling that he was drowning, but without being underwater. A spike of panic filled him. Then the cables beneath him jerked, and he felt a new pulse fill his veins, stronger and clockwork regular.
"So, now we begin,"
she said, and he felt the first razor cut down his back.
"Mistress Viola,"
she heard the voice and felt the clouds of her dream shift and billow. She was walking down the galley of ancestors back home. They were looking down at her with stone and painted eyes.
"Mistress Viola,"
said a portrait of Sisyphina von Castellan. The old woman's eyes were stern, her face hard.
"Viola!"
She came awake, head rising from the desk she had not left. Her rooms were a dim blur, the candle set above the desk, a pool of wax around the nub of a wick. Baal stood next to her, a glow globe in his hand. The outer door to the chamber was ajar.
"What is happening?"
she asked, blinking and trying to rise as the fog of her exhausted sleep pulled back from her thoughts.
"A message," said Baal, "or at least I think it is a message."
"From the surface? From Covenant?"
"No," he said, and held out a loop of polished wire. A yellow finger bone and copper cogs were threaded on it.
"A rating tried to get up to the household levels to give it to you 2 cycles ago. The guards sent him away, but took this off him. His squad sergeant found it a few hours ago, and was showing it to Kynortus when I was in the household billets."
Viola took it, staring as she forced her thoughts to quicken.
"I recognized it," he said. "It's one of the bangles worn by the void speakers you went to talk to, isn't it? But if someone tried to get it to you, it must mean something."
"It does," she said.
Then she stood, shrugging on her crimson coat. She was 2 strides to the door when she stopped, went back to her desk and pulled out a las pistol in a holster, which she buckled around her waist.
"Are you armed?"
she asked.
"Always," he replied. "But what?"
"What was that idiot of a guard thinking?" she snapped, striding towards the door. 2 cycles. A lot can happen in 2 cycles.
"What?"
"We're going down to the lower decks. No logs, no one else is informed. No one. You are my army, if I need it."
"Always," he said,
catching her up as she stopped short of the main door to the chamber.
"Good," she said, and tapped one of her rings against the wood-paneled wall.
There was a soft thump of piston bolts withdrawing, and a section of the wall hinged outwards. A small red glow globe lit in the space beyond. Narrow spiral stairs plunged down into the dark.
"I probably should have mentioned this,"
she said, and stepped through onto the stairs.
"What does it mean?"
asked Baal, before she could take the second step.
"It was a message, but what did the void speakers mean by sending it to you?"
She looked at him for a second, and then held the thread of bones and cogs up.
"It's a lie, Catcher. They are warned to prevent the bearer speaking falsely of what they have heard the Iron Mother say."
Baal opened his mouth, but she answered his question before he could ask it.
"But given like this, to a friend, it is a warning. It means that there are ghosts and revenants walking the decks. It means that we have a hidden enemy here on the ship."
The cry shuddered from Cleander's mouth before he could bite it off. The smell of burning meat filled his nose again. He wanted to gag, but the instinct found only the dead end of blanked nerves and paralyzed muscles.
"Is the pain different from before?"
asked Iaso, her voice flat.
"Yes,"
he hissed through clenched teeth. It was difficult to speak with the air flowing up his throat from one of the respiration machines.
"How so? Please be exact."
In the mirror positioned beneath his face, he could see the Medicae staring at something on one of the machines, the reflection of green numerals flowing over her eye lenses.
"It hurt more."
Localized or more general?
"Down my spine," he said. "Sharp and burning." "What does that mean?"
"The alien device, for want of a better description, has fused with both your nerve sheath and areas of bone. It appears to be biological, or at least to mimic such a nature. In places it has grown, branching along other pathways. I was reasonably sure before that it would be impossible to remove by excision. Now I am certain of it."
He heard the buzz of the chrome servo skulls and the hiss of the contraceptive mist they breathed over the open wound of his back.
"I have been trying to selectively cut and burn sections of it. This has been unsuccessful."
Cleander could hear the puzzlement floating to the surface under the layer of control.
"But you can do something."
"I am less confident of that. You see, the device has responded to what I have been doing. It is repairing, healing itself and you. It has taken a great deal to keep the incisions open. It is not going to let go of you, and it is trying to heal you to protect itself. I have never seen..."
A door release chimed.
"I ordered no interruptions," snapped Iaso.
In Cleander's mirror view of her, Iaso turned her head. He heard steps on the tiled floor from the far side of the theatre.
"This is a..."
There was a sound like wings beating. Iaso yelled. One of the servo skulls flew past her towards the door, its chrome a blur. A shriek of tearing metal and the sound of beating wings. Something dropped to the floor. Swift running steps, and he could hear Iaso scrabbling for something on one of the machines. A sound like the wind turning pages of a book. A cry, high and shrill and terrifying, and a wet thump of something hitting the tiled floor.
"Quiet," said a female voice. "It will rip your throat out if you try to move or speak without being told to. Understood?"
A pause.
"Good. Tend to your arm before you go into shock."
He heard more steps coming closer. He tried to move, but he could not. The steady, mechanical rhythm of his breath and blood beat on. His eyes were wide, fixed on the mirror beneath him that was his only window to the rest of the world. There was a spray of bright red blood across it, he noticed.
"This is the Duke von Castellan," said the same cool female voice. "Answer, or I will take a hand off him to keep yours company on the floor."
Iaso must have nodded.
"Is he conscious?"
"Yes,"
said Iaso, her voice dry and rattling with shock. Cleander's mind was racing. There were household guards nearby, but Iaso had ordered them to stay clear of the Medicae bay while she operated. Iaso must have reached for a vox alarm and... The steps paused next to him, and then a face appeared in the mirror, looking down at him. Slim, hard, with eyes that held a touch of amusement.
"Duke von Castellan, I hope you are well enough to talk."
Viola lit the candle and placed it on the deck.
"How long?" asked Baal from behind her.
He had kept at least one hand on a pistol ever since they had begun their descent to the lower decks. Viola stood next to the wall and banged her fist on a pipe in a precise rhythm.
"Not long,"
she said, turning back to the life ward. He had donned a silvered improviser. In the candlelight, it reflected her own face.
You believe them?
He asked, not looking at her, but burning his gaze slowly across the dark distance of the tunnel. Pipes formed the curve of its walls, and its floor was a rusted grate. The smoke from the candle rose in a stuttering plume. Viola could smell the synth scents laced into its tallow.
I mean that a hidden enemy could be on the ship.
Yes, she said. Tens of thousands of people, thousands of miles of passages, dead spaces and holds. There is more than enough space for someone to hide, and then there is... Her voice trailed off. In her head, the cascades of people and possibilities flowed and branched.
What?
Betrayal, she said. The chance that we have a traitor amongst us.
You think that likely?
It has happened before. Trade wars and intra-family disputes. We have seen our share of assassins and saboteurs.
How would they have got aboard?
The kind of enemies we have can afford to play long games. A tapping ran along the pipes.
Baal's pistols were in his hands.
Viola raised a hand, listening, and then tapped on the pipe in reply.
Silence fell again, and then a figure shuffled silently into the light of the candle.
Mistress,
croaked Elder Yarda, kneeling.
Shards of metal clinked as she moved.
Viola held out the loop of cogs and bones. What doom has the Iron Mother spoken? She asked. What have those that listen seen? Yarda stood and took the lie catcher. For a second she held it, her expression fixed as though she was listening. Then she hung it on her staff.
There is one who is not a child of the Iron Mother, said the elder void speaker. A woman who is an outer ghost. She moves in the dark and holds death in her hand, swift and quick. Her scent and sound is of one from beyond the mother's skin. Winged beasts follow her. She has killed others of the Iron Mother's children. She seeks ways up to the mistress's domain. This we have heard.
Viola felt herself go cold. You know where she is now? Yarda shook her head.
Not for one cycle. We sent a warning, but you did not come, and she became air and dust. We listened, though, and the bones of the Iron Mother brought us her words as she gave pain to one of your servants. She seeks one called Girid, but the servant knew nothing of that name.
The cold in Viola's mind and gut became ice. Yarda lifted a hand and pointed up to the pipe-tangled ceiling.
But he knew of the master, of your brother kin, and told the outer ghost the path to reach him.
Cleander,
she breathed. Inside, she could feel panic rising even as will and conditioning forced it into a side channel of her thoughts.
She is going after Cleander.
The old woman bowed her head again.
I have spoken all that has been seen and heard.
Viola was still for a moment, and then bowed her head.
My thanks is without measure, honored elder, she said,
then straightened, turned, and within a step she was running. This deep in the hull, she was out of vox range of the rest of the crew. It might already be too late. Baal caught her up within two strides.
Guard yourself, mistress,
called the elder void speaker from behind them as they ran.
The voice speaks of shadows, of ghosts who have crossed the outer dark and returned with false faces. Guard yourself!
Ninkara looked up at Cleander von Castellan's face. It was pale, the beard ill-kempt, and the empty left eye socket made it seem unbalanced. She thought of the details in the file she had listened to as she began this mission. The man looking back at her did not seem the shadow of the deeds and mistakes he had committed.
This is going to be a simple transaction, Duke, she said. You are going to tell me where the woman called Enna Girid is on this ship, and how to reach her. And for that,
you can spare your own life and the lives of anyone else you care to mention.
Von Castellan smiled. The breath came from his lips in mechanical thumps and gulps.
I will tell you what you can do.
She listened to each slow word of the invective that followed, and then she returned his smile and stood. The Duke von Castellan lay face down on a chirurgical slab. The skin and flesh of his back had been expertly split and pared back from the bone of his spine and the base of his skull. A chrome servo skull still remained hovering above the open wound, spraying a mist of contraceptive over the red flesh. Its twin lay on the floor close to the door where one of her hawks had ripped it from the air. She frowned at the exposed spine. Translucent silver threads tangled through the meat around the vertebrae, threading in and out of the bones.
"This looks delicate," she said. "Something best approached with care and expertise."
She looked down at the mirror reflection of his face and brought her shard blade up next to her cheek so that he could see it.
"The records of your life paint a picture of someone who serves himself above all, unless he has no choice. I hope that picture does not turn out to be inaccurate."
She lowered the tip of the blade towards the exposed vertebrae.
"Go," he began. "Stop."
Ninkara paused and looked over to where the Medicaid lay on the floor. Blood from the severed stump of her arm spattered her teal robes, and her already pale face was almost parchment white.
"Stop. You don't need to do that. I can give you what you want."
"Iaso."
"No,"
gasped von Castellan.
"Quiet, Duke,"
said Ninkara, and brushed the back of the shard blade on his shoulder. She looked at the Medike, who must be called Iaso, and raised an eyebrow.
"You know where Enagirid is on this ship?"
"Yes,"
said Iaso.
"She is in a cryo-suspended coma. The tech priest needed my help to ensure she was stable. I know where she is being kept."
"And you can access that area?"
"I am the Medicaid Primus. Of course I can."
Ninkara smiled and allowed the hawk on Iaso's chest to release its talons from her flesh.
"Get up and get yourself clean."
"Iaso," said von Castellan, "don't."
"I am sorry, my Duke,"
said Iaso, standing gingerly. Ninkara noticed that the Medike had already sealed the stump of her hand with synth flesh spray, and a sanguinary clamp ringed her wrist.
"But as I said before, my oath is to preserve your life, even if that contradicts your wishes."
She looked at Ninkara.
"May I at least close him up? He is chemically paralyzed. He will not be able to move."
Ninkara paused for a second, and then nodded.
"Quickly. And if he shows any sign of suddenly being able to leap up, he dies first."
Iaso nodded and moved to the table and began her work. Ninkara watched the flow and surge of emotion and thought on the surface of the medic's mind. The woman was telling the truth. Ninkara watched as the arms of the chirurgical array spun over the Duke's back, stitching skin back together under Iaso's single-minded guidance. After a few minutes, Iaso turned.
"Ready?"
asked Ninkara. Iaso nodded. One of the cyberhawks flitted across the room and settled onto the folded armatures above the Duke von Castellan. Ninkara formed an imperative and poured it into the creature's mind.
"Understand," she said to Iaso, "that if I die, then it will rip his throat out and dump enough venom into him that he will be dead before anyone can stop it. If he moves, he dies. If anyone enters this room, he dies."
"I understand," said Iaso.
"Good,"
said Ninkara, folding the shard blade with a snap of her wrist.
"Then let's go."
A candle flared to light, first one, then a second, and then more, until a ringed candelabra hung in the black. Enna watched as the flames grew. The light pushed outwards, painting details as it passed. A corridor with white and red tiled floor and walls, tapestries hanging from the edge of a high ceiling, their colours faded by time. word-covered skulls stacked in narrow niches. Idris stood in the middle of the corridor, frozen in mid-step. Beside her stood a thin girl in a Hessian smock. She was tall, slim, and young, yet no child. She was striding to keep up with Idris, her eyes caught in the moment of glancing up at the Inquisitor. Enna looked at the young woman, and her own eyes were a mirror of the confusion she saw there.
"That is me," she breathed. "But when I was that young, I was still in the margin gangs on Stilber. Idris did not find me there until..."
"I doubt you have ever been to Stilber," said Mylasa, stepping into sight.
Her body glove had become layered armor, enameled in the color of new vine leaves.
"I am guessing that Idris took those memories from one of the other renewed. The mental grafting is exquisite, but they are as false as the rest. This is the start of the truth."
She folded her arms, the plates of metal and ceramic clacking together.
"I cannot be sure where this is, because you were never sure either," said Mylasa into the silence.
"I was not born here, then. This is not where I am from."
Mylasa shrugged.
"Wherever it was, or is, you were a guest there for some time. Someone left you here as a child, maybe to keep you safe."
Enna turned, looking over the frozen image. The white and red tiles covering the floor were triangles. Something about them made her think of teeth. A mass of iron chains hung from a hook in the corridor wall, like a coat hung up on a peg. Lead weights hung from the chains. Enna could see images of saints and angels molded into the grey metal. She reached out to touch one in the shape of a serene face, and then stopped, her fingers an inch away.
"I can't remember. I have no idea where I am."
She touched the lead face hanging from the chain.
"But it feels familiar."
She looked at Mylasa.
"Is there more? Let's watch, shall we?"
Idris's foot completed its frozen stride with a dull clack as it touched the stone floor.
"Who are you?"
asked the image of the girl who was Enna, hurrying to keep up with the Inquisitor.
"I am the person who has come to take you out of here," said Idris, without looking around.
"Did he send you? Where is he? Is he waiting for us?"
Idris's eyes seemed to pinch tighter for an instant, lines of shadow forming in the youthful face.
"Close by," she said.
Enna watched herself stop, caution stilling her steps and tensing her muscles.
"You are lying. He's not here. Who are you?"
Idris pivoted, face controlled, eyes focused.
"You are right. He will never be coming back for you."
The pair paused, gazes locking.
"But I am here, and you need to trust me. I have been looking for you for a very long time."
The memory of Enna shook her head.
"Who are you?"
she asked. Her eyes were bright and wide.
"I am called Idris. And you? Do you have a name?"
The girl Enna nodded.
"Only the one he gave me."
Idris frowned, then gave a small smile.
"Of course," she said, as though to herself. "And what name did he give you?"
The girl who was Enna shrugged.
"He called me Revelation."
The word echoed out. The walls of the memory blurred and stretched. Light spun and reversed to shadow. Enna staggered as the word rolled on and on through her, picking up memories and turning them over like pebbles in a storm wave. Revelation. Revelation.
"You are looking for Revelation,"
said a hermit in the underworld beneath the Argo.
"What is this revelation?" asked Covenant.
"I cannot tell you. Come and see."
"Revelation," muttered Joseph. "That has a habit of meaning answers we didn't want to find."
And through the swirl and crash of memories, Enna saw the girl that was called Revelation shake her head as she looked up at Inquisitor Idris.
"I am not coming with you,"
she said.
"It was not a request," said Idris,
and her eyes were suddenly black holes into lightless depths. And Enna screamed, Idris's mind punching into the thoughts of the girl she had been, as it dragged her into the dark and silence. And so we are brought to silence. Aesir woke on a bed of ashes. It had settled over her in her thin blanket and fell from her as she raised her head. The tunnel was silent, and the cry of her waking echoed through stillness. The light of torches that had followed her through her dreams was gone, and now there was just the true and undiluted dark of this passage beneath the earth. The silence pushed in on her until she found herself about to cry out again, just to hear a sound other than the beat of her heart. Then she stopped herself. The image of the torchbearers running towards her with cries of witch bloomed briefly in her mind's eye. She crawled forwards until her hand touched the hard edge of what must have been an iron truncheon, the metal twisted and fused by heat. She felt herself shiver, and then a wave of nausea drove her back down to retch on the floor. The silence seemed to press closer. The world was spinning. She had to get up, had to move. But where could she go now? There was no home waiting for her, no comfort, just running through the dark, with the cries of hate behind her. She should just lie down again. She should... She forced herself to stand. Her head swam. She couldn't even see her hand in front. She would step until she reached a wall, and then work her way along it until... Something swooped out of the dark. Talons and needles punched into her throat as wings beat about her head. Ice and numbness poured through her. She tried to call out, but she was falling back to the ash-covered floor. Light filled the tunnel, blinding white.
"Prospect down," said a woman's voice from beyond the light. "She is secure."
"Conscious?" asked a man's voice.
"Oh, yes."
Wings beat above Aesir, and then whatever it was that had hit her was swooping away behind the light.
"Could you get that null creature away now?" asked the woman's voice. "I'm barely managing to keep my stomach down."
"No," said a second man's voice. "I think it best that he stays for now."
The speaker stepped closer, moving in front of the beams of light. Panic was flooding Aesir, but something was squeezing the thoughts small inside her head. The man squatted down next to her. He wore brushed steel armor under a red cloak. His hair was iron gray, and a beard framed his sharp face. It was the man from her dream before the torchbearers came.
"Can she speak?" he asked, looking at her.
"In,"
croaked Aesir.
"Inquisitor."
The man tilted his head, and she recognized surprise on his face.
"You see, Memnon," he said, without looking around. "She knows."
He stood, looking down into her eyes.
"Give her another dose, full unconsciousness. After all she has been through, she deserves to sleep."
Part 3. The Voice of Gods. Chapter 15. Cleander bit off the scream. He could see the reflection of the hawk perched on the arms of the Chirurgeon array above him. Its head rotated slowly. He watched it for a second, just to be sure that it hadn't noticed his arm twitch. The sensations had started some time after the woman had left with Iaso. First had come a feeling like cool air breathing across his skin. Then had come warmth, spreading out from his core. Then had come the pain, bright pain, shooting up and down his limbs as though razor wire was being pulled through his veins. It had come so fast that he had instinctively balled his fists before he remembered that he couldn't, and his fingers had twitched. At first, he had not believed it. Then, carefully, he had tried to move them and felt them tap the steel top of the slab. The hawk had shifted its claws above him, and he had gone still. The pain had still been flowing and spreading through him. His mind began racing. He remembered Iaso bending over him as the needles worked to stitch his skin back together. For an instant, He had been shielded from the woman's view. There had been a prick in his arm, so quick that he had barely noticed it. Now, bit by bit, control of his body was returning. Then he felt himself take a breath. The machine pumping air into his lungs chimed a warning. The hawk's head twitched. Cleander froze. The bird did not move. Carefully, he matched his breathing to the pump thump of the machine. He was going to have to think very carefully about what to do next. He had no reason to doubt the woman's threat that the bird would kill him if he moved. He also had no idea how long he had until he would be able to move more than a finger, let alone move fast enough to live. Once whatever ISO had injected him with restarted his heart, he doubted the machine currently pumping his blood through him would be quiet for long. Slowly, very slowly, he tested his fingers, one after another.
"Vox, work! Just work!" she shouted as she ran. Blurred data scrolled through her augmetic eye, cutting in and out. The vox bead in her ear shrieked a wall of static back at her as she and Baal ran down the passages of the lower decks. The doors to a hoist came into view as they spun around a corner.
"Your brother is guarded?" asked Baal.
He was barely breathing hard, despite the fact that they had not slowed as they ran and climbed from the lower to middle decks.
"If someone can get onto the ship, they can get to him,"
gasped Viola, still trying to spark a vox or data link.
"And this Girid?"
They reached the hoist doors. Viola rammed her rings into the control panel. Lights sputtered and blinked. She swore again.
"She is a prisoner on Command Deck 453. She is being held for Inquisitor Covenant."
She punched the controls.
"She is important."
"And your brother?"
Viola did not reply. In the cold pathways of her mind, the chances of Cleander still being alive, if the intruder had reached him, were draining to nothing by the second. Without the vox, she could not raise the household troops. Without that, then she had to follow the path of duty, as she always had done. She had to save Ena Girid, even if that left Cleander to an unknown fate. The lights on the panel fizzed and flashed green. Baal nodded and stepped back out of the hoist doors. Viola looked at him, puzzlement briefly replacing panic.
"What are you—"
"Go for your brother," he said. "I will make sure that your prisoner is safe."
"Wait, what—"
she began.
"You were going to her," he said.
The doors began to close.
"Because that is your duty, but serving you is mine."
Viola opened her mouth to speak. The doors closed, and the hoists lurched upwards. The last sight she had of the life ward was of him breaking into a run, pistols in his hands.
"This way,"
said ISO, turning through a hatch. Ninkara pushed her mind into the medic's, but felt no deception. The hawk glided through the opening. In her mind, Ninkara saw the dark passage through the bird's eyes. It was deserted.
"The deck around where they are keeping her has been cleared of security. Once we are inside that cordon, there will be no guards."
"She is not guarded."
ISO hesitated, and Ninkara felt a spike of emotion on the surface of the medic's mind.
"How is she guarded? Answer, or your duke will be dead by the time you get halfway through a lie."
"There is a woman, a former sister of the Adeptus Sororitas. She was set guard over the prisoner, and—"
ISO trailed off.
"And what else?"
"The witch might have been sent to interrogate her."
"That is all?"
"That is enough," said ISO.
Ninkara smiled and shoved the medic through the hatch.
"Then it is good that I have your help," she said.
The hawk shifted and ruffled its feathers. Cleander froze. The machine beat of his heart was still strong, but in his chest he had felt the first tremor of his own heartbeat. It had made him feel sick, a discordant rhythm pushing against the blood siphon's pulse. The machine had chimed a low warning, and that had made the bird move. He didn't know how long he would live if the blood machine went to war with his own heart, and he didn't know what would happen if he tried to move. He closed his eyes and tried to focus on keeping his breath in time with the machine's. He thought of the thing coiled around his spine.
even if I live now. For how long after? He thought,
then felt a bitter smile pull at his cheeks.
Too long. Too long, you fool.
Carefully, he began to tense the muscles of his legs and arms.
Now, he muttered to himself. Now, and then forever.
He took a deeper breath. The machines chimed.
Someone is coming,
Mylasa's voice snapped through Severita's thoughts.
Who?
Asked Severita.
I don't know. I don't have the energy to look. Not now.
Severita moved towards the chamber door, sword in hand. Thick frost had covered the walls and ceiling. Black icicles hung from pipes. The cryo machines were coughing as frost choked their exhausts. Only Enna's casket remained clear of ice. The metal of its frame glowed dark red with heat. The only other light was the prayer candle Severita had lit and placed in front of her as she knelt and prayed. No one should have been coming to this chamber, unless Covenant had returned. She reached the door, drew her bolt pistol, leveled it at the closed portal, and began a fresh prayer in the silent storm of her skull.
He who watches, be my sight. He who sees, open my eyes. He who judges, guide my hand.
With me!
Shouted Viola, running, as bulkheads slammed open ahead of her. Two household troopers ran with her, armored, helmed, and visored. The two guards in the companionway in front of her hesitated for a second.
Move!
Roared Viola. The two guards fell in with the two she had found one deck down. The Vox was still a mess of growling static. The doors to the primary Medicaid wing loomed in front of her as she rounded a corner. Her gun was in her hand. She should have a cadre of troops with her. She should have gone to the bridge, taken stock, calculated, evaluated.
Anything unknown is hostile, she said, as she reached the doors. Shoot to kill!
The four troopers' weapons armed with a clatter as she hammered her rings into the override panel. Ninkara could feel the psychic pressure building. The hawk on her shoulder flinched, beak open in a silent cry. The passage was wide and dark, but she could see through the bird's eyes. Iaso stumbled, and Ninkara caught her and pulled her on. Frost marked the door they were making for. The air smelled of burning plastic and roses. She could taste the blood and storm charge.
Open the door,
she hissed at Iaso and shoved her forward. The soft fabric of her camellia-lined cloak folded her into the dark as she stepped back. The hawk glided from her shoulder into the dark above. Her pistol was in her left hand, her shard blade in her right.
It's sealed from the inside, said Iaso. Then get them to open it.
The Medicaid did not move for a moment, and then reached for the speaker control next to the frosted door.
What's next? Said Enna.
Mylasa looked at her, surprise creasing the perfect lines of her face. Enna shook her head.
Come on, let's be done with it. What revelation do you have to show me next? Something before this. A child crying alone in a cradle. Abandonment. A mother screaming alone as I was born and she died. Whatever it is, let's start now. Why pause? The truth must be close. Let's hack it out right now.
She bit the last words off. She was almost vibrating with anger. Mylasa looked at her for a long moment. Enna stared back at her. The image of the Psyker wore a simple green robe, its hood hanging around her shoulders. Her hair curved around her neck in a long plait. After a few seconds, she found that she wanted nothing more than to punch the Psyker's face until it was bloody. She let out a breath and looked away. The space around her was grey and depthless. Again, she had the feeling that there was someone standing directly behind her.
Do you want answers? Mylasa asked.
Do I want answers? She laughed.
The image of the Psyker actually flinched.
After all this time,
she laughed again, and the grey air seemed to flex.
After all you have done to me, after all the choices that have been taken from me, you ask me that. This is not a universe that allows choice, Enna, and if it does, that choice is an unkindness.
Mylasa turned away and looked into the grey mist around them. Enna noticed that there were shadows in the distance, as though a diffuse light was seeping out of the distance and washing past things standing just out of sight.
"We can't,"
began the Psyker, and then paused.
"I can take us no further alone. Everything up to this point was buried deep by Idris and the Renewed. But there is more, and it is buried deeper still. Too deep for my skill and strength."
She turned back to Enna.
"I could try, but I think it might kill you, and I have a feeling it might do the same to me."
Enna looked at Mylasa, and then the grey land around.
"If Idris did not hide those deep memories from me, then who did?" "I am not certain. But you have an idea. You always have an idea, don't you?"
Mylasa smiled sadly.
"You. I think you did this, Enna. I think when the Renewed and Idris began their work on your mind, you hid things from them, walled them off, and shut them out so strongly that even with all of their craft, they did not find them."
Enna opened her mouth to reply, then closed it and shook her head.
"You showed me all of this so that you could ask me to help you go further, didn't you?" "Yes," said Mylasa.
Enna gave a snort of laughter.
"But how could I have done that? An assassin taken by Idris as a child and made into a weapon. How does a child or a weapon do what you describe?"
"I don't know," said Mylasa. Enna held herself still and quiet, and then looked at the shadows in the mist.
"What do I do?"
she asked eventually, turning towards Mylasa.
"Surely I don't just..."
Mylasa was not there. Light flooded her eyes, blinding. The mist and shadows were gone. The scene that replaced it was both smudged and sharp. Patches of colour clumped together like areas of half-finished artist's canvas. A man stood above her, the sharp features of his face clear above the blurred impression of brushed steel armour. A red cloak hung from his shoulders, and a grey-flecked beard ran down the edge of his jaw. His hair was drawn back in a ponytail behind his head. The tri-barred eye sigil of the Inquisition was pinned to a fold of the cloak.
"You may leave us,"
said the Inquisitor, his voice deep and resonant. His dark eyes glittered as he looked down at Enna. She was seeing this memory as she had lived it, she realized, through a child's eyes.
"Of course, Lord Inquisitor," said the voice of someone she could not see. There was a pause, and then the man smiled at her.
"Hello again," he said. "You look less hungry than when we last met, at least."
A moment of silence. The man's hands appeared. His fingers held a disc of brass and bone, the width of a small eating plate. Symbols, lenses, and crystals covered its surface. A series of rings divided the disc, and he moved them each in turn, aligning elements of the design, eyes hard with focus. After a moment, his hands stilled. He looked at the disc for a second, and then lowered it.
"What is that?"
said a voice. Enna flinched at the sound. It was her voice, younger and higher, but still her voice.
"My knowledge of the Monastery of the Last Candle is not detailed," said the Inquisitor. "But I thought that curiosity is not encouraged amongst its children."
"But I am not part of the monastery."
The man looked at her for a long moment.
"I am an Inquisitor," he said.
"Yes," she said, "I know."
"Do you know what that means?" he asked.
"It means that everyone should be frightened of you."
The lines around the man's eyes crinkled, but his face remained still.
"But you are not afraid, it seems."
"Should I be?"
The smile was brief, like a flash of light in the dark.
"Very much so. Do you know what this is?"
He held up the disc of bone and brass.
No.
I must admit, the question was largely rhetorical. There are very few people who would be able to begin to give you an answer, and almost all of them would be wrong. It's an etheric or spectrum, or at least that is what some call it. It was created by a madman, and is used to measure the influences of imperceptible forces on the flow of cause and effect.
It tells the future.
It tells me what the present means. The future is a different matter.
That's witchcraft, isn't it?
Just so, he said. He paused, and the disc disappeared.
A second later, his hands reappeared, holding a small package wrapped in soft, pale leather. He knelt down so that his face was now level with her. He set the packet down and carefully unfolded it. Beneath the leather was a layer of purple velvet, and within that a stack of rectangular crystal wafers, each the length of an open palm along their longest side. He fanned them out with a gesture. A pattern of eagles and serpents wheeled and squirmed in gold and silver on the back of each wafer.
Please, he said, choose one.
What is it?
A conduit, for the will of the Emperor. Some call it his tarot.
What does it do?
It shows us things we cannot see.
Silence filled the pause, and then a small hand, that must have been her own, reached out towards the tarot wafers. The eagles and serpents flickered as the fingers hovered above them. Then the hand darted down and touched a wafer. The design on the back froze, feathers and scales suddenly red with blood, broken wings tumbled across the crystal. Her hand snapped back as though burned. The bearded man's features had become a mask.
"Turn it over, please," he said softly.
The hand appeared again, hesitated, and then flicked the wafer over. An enthroned figure sat on the crystal surface. Its robes were black, and it held a silver lightning bolt in its left hand, a jade chalice in its right. A rayed halo of silver flickered around its head. A blue heaven, spotted with stars, turned behind it. Each detail was sharp and real, seeming a thing with dimension and life and, at the same time, a painting. Only the figure's face remained hidden, the features a shadow inside a deep hood.
"The Emperor," said the man, softly.
"You sound scared," said Enna's voice. "Why?"
He breathed out and smiled, but his eyes were still on the image on the crystal sliver.
"What is your name?" he asked at last.
"Aesir," she said.
"Suitable for a pilgrim, but not for you. You shall have a new name from now on."
He shook his head and gathered up the spread of crystal wafers.
"You shall be called Revelation."
"Revelation? Does that mean something?"
"Everything means something."
The last word seemed to linger in Enna's ears as the image of the man faded.
And then it was just a dimming echo running off into the distance, and Enna felt the dream of tears on her cheeks, but didn't know why she wept.
Chapter 16
Coleg followed Covenant as the Inquisitor strode towards the doors of the House of Concordance. Shouts and cries from connected passages and stairwells echoed up the long corridor. The panic was rolling through the monastery like thick smoke now. Parts of it were alight and burning. They had heard cries and screams from inside the inner cloisters as they had come from the bridge. Coleg knew panic and fear. It was his speciality, a weapon that he had been trained to create and use, and though his alerted mind did not let him experience its results, he understood like a falcon understood the winds it rode. And he could tell that terror was rising faster than it could be contained or outrun.
"Lord Covenant!"
came a call from by the door into the House of Concordance. Epicles hobbled out of the sally door beside the main entrance, leaning on a cane. Covenant had the spinning brass device out again, his eyes fixed on it as he strode towards Epicles. The arbitrators on duty came to attention.
"Lord Covenant, there is something you should know," said Epicles.
Covenant reached the doors. The scanning beams of the servo skulls behind the arbitrators flicked over him and Coleg.
"Speak," he said to Epicles.
"I said something to the abbot who was searching the records. I think I said too much. He left and..."
"It does not matter now. It is coming, Epicles, and when the prospect rises, that is where the triumvirate will be."
They entered the chamber. Orsino was standing by a block of machinery, projecting a blurred hologram of tunnels and passages. Soot and blood marked her armor, and the armor of the arbitrators at her side. Glavius Forro stood beside her. His hooded head twitched up as Covenant approached.
"This place cannot be held," said Orsino, turning without preamble.
Her face was pale.
"It is coming apart. The Red Pilgrims have breached the inner cloisters in several places. If you intend a last stand and martyrdom, then that's the only wish I think you will have granted here."
"The prospect is emerging. They will be here," said Covenant, halting with them and holding up the brass and crystal device. "Epicles, begin the divinations."
The old astropath trembled and nodded. The smell of smoke was already threading the air. Everything in the chamber seemed to have become still, a moment balanced on the edge of the future. Glavius Forro unplugged the cable connecting him to the monastery's communications system.
"Communications are failing across the monastery structure," he said, his machine voice low. "My last summation from available data is that the death-life termination rates in the drifts and outer cloisters are near total. Fire is spreading, and the geothermal governors are failing."
"Everything will freeze or burn," said Orsino, looking from the Magos to Covenant. "The dominion of man left to the pyre."
Covenant met her gaze.
"The triumvirate is here. This is a moment that cannot be allowed to pass to them."
"And everything else is irrelevant. The rule of law, the survival of anything or anyone else?"
"Yes," said Covenant.
Orsino looked at him for a long moment. Coleg noticed the lines around her eyes pinched tighter.
"You are more like Argento than you think."
For a second, Coleg thought he saw something move under the still mask of Covenant's face. Then he nodded.
"Get every remaining portion of our force together. The future is coming, and we shall be ready."
Shouts from by the door made them all turn. The arbitrators had a woman in a robe held in a double armlock. She was breathing hard with pain, but her eyes were defiant. Coleg recognized her as the assistant to the abbot who had been reviewing the monastery's records. She was called Claudia, he remembered.
"My lords, she says..."
began one of the arbitrators.
"Inquisitor," she called, "I have knowledge that you desire."
The arbitrators shifted their grip, and Claudia screamed. Covenant raised a hand.
"Let her speak," he said, as they lowered her.
"I want a promise first," she sneered.
Orsino flinched forwards, but Covenant stilled her with a look.
"Speak your price," he said.
"Covenant," began Orsino.
"Commerce is faster than principle when you have no time, and we have none."
He looked back at Claudia. "Speak."
"Abbot Iacto, the master of my order," she paused. "For the first time in his life, he has done something stupid."
The woman shook her head, her eyes for a moment looking at something that she alone saw.
"Save him," she said at last. "Give your word that you will save him, and I will tell you what we found."
Covenant held her gaze for a second, and then nodded.
"You have my word," he said.
The dust rolled through the dream, great billowing walls of grey dust. It was there in every breath, there gritting eyes when they blinked. The dreamer coughed, and a galaxy of burning stars exploded through him. He staggered and fell to his knees. Sharp stones ground beneath him. Edges and points dug into his skin.
He reached down and picked up a handful of stones and lifted them up so that they were in front of his eyes. He blinked, and the dust flowed and sucked into his eyes. Then it cleared, and he saw. They were not stones in his hands. They were bones, broken and dry. He gave a muffled cry as he dropped them, and was about to rise when the dust cloud peeled back in front of him. A land lay before him. No, not a land, a city, but a city like nothing he had ever seen or dreamed. Towers and battlements and domes rose like mountain ranges. Statues as tall as cathedral spires reached up to the shrouded sky. The dust wind blew through the avenues and peeled over the faces of the statues and battlements.
Help!
He turned at the voice. A man sat on a stone chair 3 paces behind him. The chair was plain and grey, its surface pitted by the wind. The man that sat on it wore grey, the fabric so worn that it seemed as though the dust had settled in a thin skin on top of his wasted flesh and bones. There were wounds in the flesh, too, scabbed and blackened gashes that wept slow tears of pus.
I... help!
The enthroned man said again, shifting his head, shivering with fatigue.
I...
began the dreamer.
I... who are you? What are you? This is a dream, isn't it? It...
coughed the figure on the throne.
It can't go on. I... What can't go on? What are you talking about?
He asked, but the wasted figure only shook its head. Then he laughed, and somewhere behind the curtain of dust, a growl of thunder answered.
Why am I even speaking? You're just a sleep phantom. This is a dream. And somewhere...
His words faltered. He blinked, pain and panic flashing through his eyes.
I am dying,
Iacto said softly.
I am bleeding out on the floor of a chapel.
He laughed again, but the sound was low and cold, and the thunder did not answer.
All that time... all those years climbing in rank and manoeuvring for power. And this is the end I was reaching for. A fever dream on the edge of an abyss.
Aye,
said the figure in the stone chair, and raised its hand. The city around them moaned as the wind pulled the dust of powdered bones through its streets.
Iacto.
His head jerked around. The figure in the stone chair was looking at him, gaze steady, eyes clear in its wasted face. It held out its hand, skeletal fingers opened. The figure twitched, and for an instant Iacto felt as though its pain had whipped through him too. He gasped and staggered, falling to his knees. Black voids of pain and fatigue and endless screaming nightmare opened in him. Night eternal and dark and laughing, and he was alone, alone as the dark and cold closed in, growling like wolves hungry for meat in winter, and he could hear the rattle and hiss of them and hear their breath as they licked the air, and he felt the weakness in his limbs as he rose to beat them back. Then the pain fled, and the dream was of the dead city once more.
Why?
He said at last, and the wind snatched the word away.
There are other people dying, other people who are better, other...
The wind was rising. Dust had swallowed the city. Somewhere in the distance beyond this dream, his heart was beating the last of his blood. He looked up, trying to breathe, trying to stay alive. The figure on the throne was a fading blur, its hand still held out.
Iacto.
It said again. He wanted to cry. He wanted to shout. He wanted to do anything but reach out to that hand. And he heard a question rise in him, the last question that he thought would come to his lips.
Will,
he coughed,
will it mean
something.
Please.
Ayakto laughed one last time and reached up to take the proffered hand.
Joseph heard the breath gasp from his chest.
Joseph?
The monastery was as a mountain of dark stone and pinprick light above him. He tried to take another step towards it. The snow-swirled sky rolled over above him, and the snow-covered ground caught him.
Joseph!
Agata was kneeling next to him, glancing between him and the surrounding dark. The snow seemed still in the sky above him. He could hear a voice calling. They had come so close,
so close. Just a little further, and they would have been at the door. Just a little...
I am sorry,
Iaso had said. He had felt cold breathe through him.
Thank you, Medicae Primus, he had said after a moment, and slid off the slab, and began to pull the top half of his robe back over his tattooed bulk. Your service has been exemplary.
Iaso's head twitched.
What? He asked, glancing at her. Something wrong?
Most in your position. It is more typical. You haven't asked any of the questions I was prepared for.
Are you sure? What can be done? Is there a way out of this? Those kind of questions, you mean?
Yes, exactly those.
Well?
I do not follow. Well, what?
Well, are there any good answers in there that I am missing out on?
Iaso looked at him for a second and shook her head.
No, she said. There are things that can be done that might...
Things that will cost what I do, for the chance of a few more days watching the sand drain down. Thank you. I know what that looks like, and no, thank you.
He gave a smile that he didn't feel.
I'm going to do anything but sit and wait. Besides, there are things that I need to do. You are new, so I am going to guess that Viola would not have recruited you if you were anything other than exemplary in skill and honor. So I will count on your oath that this is my concern and mine alone.
Iaso had not moved for a second.
An inquisitor is like unto the god emperor. If he...
He needs me, said Joseph. They need me, and they need me as a living soul, not a dying man.
She put her hand on his shoulder.
With respect, from what I have observed, the Inquisitor is little given to emotional attachment.
That lie of his is why he needs me, he said, and shook her arm free. That's why they all need me. So I am going to be there for them.
I am sorry, Master Preacher, but it is not that simple. You...
Joseph. Just Joseph. Or Corriv. And yes, it is that simple.
Joseph,
Agata called him. The snow was falling on his face, touching his cheeks with frost fingers. The monastery of the last candle burned and began to scream as the snow fell. Down in its roots, beasts that had begun as stray dogs and lost humans howled with the hunger of the starveling Neverborn stitched into their skin as they stalked the sepulchres and tunnels. Up and out the red pilgrims flowed, through the dormitories where prayers had long before become tears, and now became screams. Coals and candles were tipped into spreading pools of lamp oil, and the orange teeth of the inferno ate tapestries and cracked stained glass in its setting. Death began to gather souls in the thousands, from chambers where smoke and heat stole the air from lungs, and in shrines where unanswered prayers were cut with jagged knives. The screams and flames rose up into the night. Seen from above, the heap of sacred buildings glowed like coals as the blaze began to seep out into the freezing dark. High above it all, the sacred flame guttered on its high tower. Aurora light, red and bruised, began to flow across the bellies of the storm clouds and stain the falling snow. Down beneath the great cathedral's dome,
Memnon stepped from the shadow of the door to the stairway that led down to the bishop's sanctuary. Above him, the vault of the central nave's roof spread from the tops of granite columns. The light of fires flickered across high stained-glass windows, lending light to the halos of saints. Between the pillars and beneath the glazed faces of martyrs, empty silence spread to welcome him. Geddon had been waiting in the shadows, and now scampered forwards to meet him. The Auspectra's slapping steps echoed on the tiled floor.
"There has been a shift," she hissed, without preamble. "It started 3 minutes ago across multiple etheric spectra. Atmospheric and rational data area also fluctuating."
"The prospect?"
"The readings, though, do not make sense," said Geddon,
shaking her bulky head as though she had not heard him.
"This is not a typical prospect. The waveforms are not synchronizing. They are diverging, as though the manifestation was not a single event. As though it were..."
The cathedral's main doors blew in, stone, wood, and polished metal scattered through the air. A burst of gunfire ripped out of the dark and tore Geddon's head off. Electricity arced from the ruined machinery stacked on her shoulders as she fell. Memnon flinched back as the fire dragged onto him. Blinding light strobed around him, then blazed as heavy rounds slammed into air and exploded into fire and noise. Koleg's visor dimmed as the conversion field blazed around the target. The arbitrators were advancing between the pillars in pairs, firing as they moved. Star-bright light filled the nave. The sound of gunfire reached up to the ceiling and roared in echoes through the shredded dark. Koleg rose and ran forwards, stripping the skeletal stock from the macro-stubber as he moved. He did not need it now. Things were going to get close. His kill shot against the first target had been difficult, but he had made an error. He had not accounted for the other target having a protection field. At that distance, they had not been able to tell which was the higher priority target. That question was resolved now, at least.
"Find and close the exits," came Orsino's shout over the vox as she limped in the wake of the running arbitrators.
Glavius Forrow kept close behind her, supporting the figure of the astropath, Epicles. Last came the robed figure of the monk called Claudia. She had shrunk back behind the bulk of a pillar as the cacophony rose.
"Keep firing! Don't give him a chance to react," called Orsino.
"False pilgrim," came Covenant's voice, rising to amplified thunder over the sound of gunfire.
The Inquisitor had come forward with Koleg as they had set the snap ambush and moved with him now. The Inquisitor did not fire, and the sword was still sheathed at his back. In his hand, the brass and crystal device sung as it spun, faster and faster, blurring through symbols.
"By the power of the throne and the master of mankind, I charge you to submit to judgment," called Covenant as he strode forwards.
The lone man stood still for a second, a shadow behind the blazing halo of his conversion field. For a moment, the rhythm of gunfire slackened, then as the blaze of light around the man faded, Koleg saw him raise a hand to his mouth as though to blow a kiss. Dust billowed out, and a sound that pulled all other sound to silence echoed out. Koleg felt himself falter, and tasted burned spice in his mouth, inside his mask. The nearest arbitrator to the man froze, shaking in place. And the dust poured down, spreading out and up, growing and twisting. Shapes uncoiled within it, grey and soft, shadow and ash. They hung in the air, folding and sliding for an instant that stretched like a pulled thread. Then they slid from out of being into incarnation. They were grey like the powder on a moth's wing, or the fine ash sieved from a corpse furnace. Wings thumped the air. Tentacles slid over the ground. Mouths opened in faces of dust and shrieked with thirst. They poured forwards as above them the eyes of glass saints blazed with the light of their burning sanctuary.
Chapter 17. Alarms rang through the Medicae wing. The hawk shrieked above Cleander and spread its wings. He shoved upwards with all his strength and twisted. The bird dived, claws bared, beak wide in a shriek. His fist struck its wing as it beat the air. The bird jolted back. Cleander roared as the bones in his hand shattered. The hawk dived at him as he scrambled off the slab. His legs caught in the pipes, still linked to his body, and he pitched backwards, hand grabbing at the silver knives laid out next to the slab. The door to the theatre slammed open. He saw a blur of household uniforms as the bird came at him. The bird struck as his hand closed on a scalpel. Shouts filled the air. He stabbed, up. The point rammed through the bird's breast. Claws raked his arm. The hawk's head was thrashing from side to side. He could see its yellow eyes in its chrome skull.
"Get back!"
Viola shouted from behind him. The needles in the bird's legs were extending, beads of milky venom growing like pearls at their tips. Cleander rammed it away. He felt the stitching down his spine rip. The bloody hawk beat its wings to try to catch the air. A cluster of lasbolts burned through it in an instant before two shot rounds reduced it to shredded meat and torn feathers. Cleander lay on the floor for a moment, breathing hard, eyes closed. Then he rolled over, hands scrabbling at the pipes and tubes linked to him.
"Turn these damn machines off before they kill me," he growled.
Someone moved to obey. He grabbed hold of the side of the slab and began to pull himself to his feet.
"What are you doing?" said Viola.
"A very serious person with a sword and another of these damn birds has taken Iaso and is after Enna."
The world spun and swam around him.
"I am going after her."
"Enna!"
Mylasa's voice echoed out of the distance. Grey fog billowed around Enna as she turned. Towering shadows loomed and scattered through the murk.
"Enna!"
The shout came from just behind her. She whirled and saw Mylasa standing an arm's reach away. The image of the psycho was chalk pale, the skin drawn over the bones, eyes sunken in pits of shadow. A frayed cloak of rough green fabric hung from her, flapping, dripping with water, as though Mylasa was standing in a storm.
"I saw,"
began Enna, the memory of the bearded inquisitor and the tarot wafer rising again, sharpening.
"I saw someone. He gave me a name."
Mylasa was trembling, rainwater pouring down her face.
"I know. I saw. Enna, something is happening outside. I don't know what, but you know something, don't you?"
said Enna, feeling the truth of what she was saying as she spoke.
"You recognized something in the memory, didn't you?"
Mylasa was juddering in place, shivering. Her cloak billowed in a gust.
"I can't. You are too strong for me to be here."
"What did you see?"
shouted Enna. Mylasa was crumpling to the ground, as though bent by the wind.
"Who was he?"
Mylasa looked up at Enna, gasping.
"Argento," she said. "The Inquisitor in your memory was Covenant's master."
Enna blinked. Around her, the shadows of memories slouched forward.
"Revelation! Aesir, revelation!"
they called in the high voices of a lost past.
"Medicae Primus?"
asked Severita. Her gun was still aimed at the sealed door.
"Why are you here?"
"I am supposed to review the subject's physical condition at regular intervals,"
said Iaso's voice out of the vox speaker. Severita stilled a shiver. The temperature in the chamber had plunged. Cold light surrounded Mylasa.
"That is not going to be possible," said Severita.
"I must insist," said Iaso.
Nenkara flinched. The distant telepathic link to the hawk she had left with Duke von Castellan had just been severed. She blinked. Ghost images of the bird's last moments bubbled through her eyes. She took two quick breaths and unharnessed a crack charge from her waist. Iaso was still talking into the vox speaker next to the door, but it was clearly pointless. She was out of time.
"Leave here," said Severita. "Leave here now, Medicae Primus."
"I have my duty,"
said Iaso's voice. Severita glanced behind her at the ghost-haloed witch and the glowing casket.
"'And I mine,' said Severita. The door blew in. The blast flipped Severita back. She hit a cryo machine and tumbled to the floor. She gasped, unable to breathe.
"'Stand!' screamed a voice in her skull. "'Stand! Now!'
She rose. Blood scattered from her. Her right hand was no more than mangled fingers. Her pistol gone. She couldn't feel it. Shrapnel had punched through her armor and into her right ribs.
"'Emperor, hear your servant!'
Pain exploded in her as she leapt towards the doorway. Her sword was in her left hand, blade lit.
"'Emperor, protect your servant!'
A gun roared. Severita twisted aside as the round shattered against the wall. A blur moved just beyond the torn door. She spun forwards, blood and muscle and pain and prayer spiraling together.
"'Emperor, bring death to your betrayers!'
A figure came through the door and sliced down at Severita. Its cloak billowed and folded with the darkness. A sword whistled as it cut. Fast, very fast. Severita did not even see the cut, but her sword found it anyway. Light and sound screamed out as the swords kissed. The enemy was cutting again, but Severita had let go of her blade as the edges met. She could see a face inside a hood, eyes hidden by infragoggles, mouth set in a line, and in that moment she saw the mouth thin in surprise as Severita's sword spun through the air. Severita ducked, spun low, and kicked the assassin in the gut. The woman staggered back half a step, balanced, and lashed forwards. Severita caught her falling sword out of the air. The power field reactivated as her fingers closed on the haft. She cut, the blade spitting lightning. The cloaked woman flicked her blade up to parry. The edges met, and the woman's blade exploded into fragments. The woman jerked back, the hilt of her shattered sword still in her hand. Severita thrust, body weight and momentum rippling through her and down to the lightning-wreathed sword tip. And as the thrust unfolded, Severita saw a flash as the cloaked woman brought the haft of her shattered sword up and slashed down. A blade of splinters formed as it slid through the air, whip-crack fast, but slowed in Severita's eye. She jumped back, feeling the pain of her wounds flare into sharp, white fire. The edge of the woman's sword struck the bracer on her left arm, bit deep and sheared away. She stepped back, but the movement was too slow, and the cloaked woman was coming forwards, cutting again and again. She reversed her sword, parrying and deflecting as she backed against the wall. Severita could feel the thread of prayer in her mind fray. Blood was pulsing now from the wound the shrapnel had ripped in her torso armor. Behind her, she could feel the frozen, crackling presence of Enna and Mylasa.
"'Emperor, aid thy servant!'
The words ripped from her mouth. The swords struck again, but this time she arched her back, bending like a willow in the wind. The cloaked woman's sword slid past above her as she uncoiled. The other woman flinched back. Severita kicked out and felt the impact jolt up her leg. The woman slammed back through the ruin of the door. Severita followed, sword ready to deliver a final blow. Something dived out of the dark. Severita had an instant to catch a glimpse of wings and chrome talons before it struck her. Shrieks filled her ears, wings beat around her head. She raised her sword and hand, but talons had already found the flesh of her neck. She had a second of feeling numb cold cascade through her, and then she was falling down to darkness, the high shrieks filling her ears as the faltering prayer in her soul vanished into the darkening world. Ninkara picked herself up off the floor of the corridor. The cyberhawk was still perched on top of the bloody form of the guard. A sister of battle, almost certainly, and an exceptionally resilient and skilled one at that. Ninkara was lucky to be alive. She stepped back towards the door. A flicker of thought pulled the hawk to her shoulder. A groan came from behind her, and she turned. ISO was sprawled on the floor where she had fallen after the crack charge had blown the door in.
"Be still," she said.
ISO flinched but did not disobey. Ninkara looked through the door. She spent a breath letting her eyes glide over the details.
a single candle set on the floor was the only natural light source. A figure, wreathed in ice and ghost light, hung in the air in the middle of the space. Ninkara could feel the power of the mind inside the figure's skull, but it was directed, locked, and focused on the heat-cloaked casket bolted upright to the floor. There was someone inside, a smudge of pale face framed through a view slit. Ninkara aimed her pistol through the door at the floating psyker. She was not going to take the risk of going any closer with it still alive. She breathed out slowly, her finger squeezing on the trigger. A bullet slammed into the gun as it fired and ripped it from her hand. Yanked off target, the round hit the psyker on its shoulder and tore through the bulbous machines wringing its neck. It spun back, tumbling to the ground. The force of the psychic cry made Ninkara sway. She turned, eyes and mind trying to find the shooter. The hawk launched from her shoulder, wings spreading, beak opening. A bullet tore its head off before it could beat its wings. It tumbled to the deck, thrashing. Ninkara dived through the door. The fingers of the hand that had held the pistol were burning with pain, but she could still kill in other ways. She rolled and came up next to the casket, blade raised. "I wouldn't do that," said a voice from by the door. Ninkara rammed the tip of the shard blade down towards the still face beyond the view slit. A bullet hit the descending blade. It shattered. The magnetically cohered shards rang off the metal of the casket. The second bullet hit her sword hand just after the first hit the blade. The impact pitched her onto the floor. She rolled, stabbing her will out at the shooter's mind, and struck cold ice. Three more bullets hit her in the shoulders and knee. She collapsed, the world swimming around her. A man in a quilted body glove advanced from the shadows. His eyes were still, his movements unhurried. His hands hung loosely, a pistol held in each. Ninkara gasped, tasted blood on her tongue, and spat at him. The man raised an eyebrow, then squatted down, so that he was only an arm's reach away. Ninkara tried to move her arms, tried to find a last thread of strength to match her defiance.
"I hit the nerve clusters," said the gunman. "The upside for you is that you should not be feeling much in the way of pain. The downside is you don't get to murder me with those oh-so-very deadly hands of yours."
Ninkara closed her eyes and stabbed her mind at him again. He blinked.
"Your master should not have sent you alone," he said, and his voice had shed the casual softness that it had held before.
His blue eyes were suddenly cold and hard. The words folded into Ninkara's smudged thoughts.
"And he should not have interfered. His is the hand on the scythe, not the sower of seed."
"Her master? How did he—"
"He is a man of faith," said the gunman. "He should have known that angels watch over the worthy."
"Who—" began Ninkara. But the man had holstered one of his pistols and held up a single bright silver coin in front of her.
"The path to resurrection and revelation is not simple."
He nodded at the casket.
"She matters more than you, more than me."
He opened his mouth and placed the silver coin under his tongue.
"And so she must live, and you must pass through the gates of night."
He stood. The muzzle of his pistol was a black circle in Ninkara's eye. She opened her mouth to spit again.
"And not be reborn in light," he said, and pulled the trigger.
Cleander stumbled and fell as he came around the corner. Viola caught him, flicked a glance at one of the household troopers, and he felt another strong arm loop under his shoulders and steady him.
"You are a fool, or have you just decided that you finally want to die?"
hissed Viola.
"Is that concern?" he gasped, as they kept moving.
Troopers were now moving ahead of them. The ship-wide alarm had finally started to sound.
"I always thought we both agreed you were overdue to inherit."
"If you were not already one step over the threshold, I would push you over the door of death myself," snapped Viola, "especially if you keep talking."
He began to laugh, and fire burned across his back.
"Mistress Viola,"
one of the troopers up ahead shouted. Cleander could see the wreckage of the hatch door leading to the room where they had kept Enna Girid. More troopers ran forwards, guns raised, but Cleander was looking at the figures slumped on the corridor floor.
Are they?
A household trooper with a Medicaid flash on his shoulder was kneeling next to Iaso, another by the bloody tangle of Severita.
The Medicaid and the sister are both alive, said the trooper.
Viola pulled herself out from under Cleander's arm, and he slumped into the trooper supporting him. Baal stepped through the wreck of the door, his pistols holstered. Behind him, a bloody corpse lay on the floor next to Enna's cryo-casket. Blood had stained the melting ice and slush on the floor pink.
You got here in time, said Viola.
The life ward gave a grim smile.
Only just,
he said, and nodded to the bloody corpse on the floor.
Whoever the assassin was, she nearly made it.
Cleander saw him glance at the thawing cryo-casket and the face of Enna Girid beyond the crystal view-slit.
Whoever sent her wanted this sleeping dreamer dead very badly.
He paused.
Who is she? You said she was called Enna Girid, but who is she?
Mistress Viola, Captain von Castellan.
An armsman with a boosted voxet came through the door. Viola turned, but the man was already speaking.
Signal through from the bridge. The storms and etheric interference have broken.
What? Asked Cleander. How? The man paused, took a breath, and something in the way he straightened sent ice down Cleander's spine.
Something has happened on the surface.
Silence filled the long moment that followed. It was Viola who spoke first.
Tell us, she said.
Chapter 18. Koleg felt his mind turn over as the Neverborn howled towards him. His skin shivered over his muscles. Inside his skull, a smothering, silent scream echoed on and on. The cut threads of his memories and emotions writhed. Ghosts of hate and fear rose and shouted at him to run, to charge, to put the gun to his head and pull the trigger and let it all be done. He leveled his pistol and fired. Rounds roared from the macro stubber. Muzzle flare reached 3 meters out and brushed the faces of the charging demons. He panned the gun across the mass of limbs and maws, cutting through dust like flesh. The barrel glowed red a second before the ammo cylinder ran dry. He snapped it free. A demon, shaped like a ball of tentacles and teeth, bounded forwards. Koleg snapped a fresh cylinder in place as the thing reached for him. He was not going to be fast enough. He knew that with a cold certainty, even as he looked up into the mouth, yawning wide above him, its throat a well of shadow. A wall of white fire slammed into the demon and blasted it back into a cloud of dust and screaming shadow. Covenant came forward into the gap. A cold light haloed his head, and his sword was lit as he drove it into the mass of Neverborn. Lightning and steel met flesh. The light around his head blazed bright, and a wave of force ripped outwards from him. Koleg felt himself launch back. The power ploughed into the Neverborn, pulping bodies back to powder. Covenant let out a cry of effort, and the psychic force changed shape, narrowing into an arc that sliced on like a sickle through grass. The air was thick with the smell of frost and iron. Covenant strode in the wake of the psychic wave. Dissolving hands and talons reached for him from the floor. The bald man's face was serene, his eyes clear, though there was blood running down his chin from his lips.
You are one of the three, said Covenant. The Wanderer.
His shoulder cannon twitched, but spun to fire at the demon still crawling from the air. He held his sword before him in both hands. The cold lightning of the power blade pushed hard shadows into the recesses of his face.
You let this holy place burn just for this moment, did you not? Said the Wanderer.
The cannon on Covenant's shoulder twitched around and fired. Light exploded around the man. When the flash faded, the man was still standing there, just as he had been before. Covenant advanced. The roar of torn reality and gunfire seemed to form a tunnel before his steps.
In the reckoning, what will weigh in the balance against your atrocities, Covenant?
You are a false servant of the throne, said Covenant.
The Wanderer gave a single shake of his head, and the gesture raised the memory of a priest that had talked to Coleg as a child and explained that salvation did not mean kindness.
I am shriven, said the Wanderer. I am damned, but I take that burden for mankind, even for you, Covenant. Sins should only be carried by those that can bear them.
Covenant was 5 paces away, sword rising, eyes fixed.
Salvation for mankind, that is all that matters. Everything else is just a dream that has lost its way.
An invisible hand slammed the man back off his feet. The Wanderer's conversion field flared bright and brighter, strobing through colors as it overloaded. And Covenant was charging now, sword rising. The demons of dust howled and turned towards Covenant. Coleg fired, sawing gunfire through the grey talons and maws reaching for his master. The Wanderer's halo of light vanished, and the edge of Covenant's sword descended like a comet dragged from the night sky. A shape blurred across Coleg's sight. He had enough time to catch the impression of glowing wounds crossing bare muscle and a curved edge that dragged the light from the air in a smear behind it. Covenant's sword slammed into something, and the gloom exploded into shreds of shadow and howling light.
Bishop Zelita locked the iron door behind her and pulled the key out of the lock. The air of the governor's chamber vibrated with the sound of pistons and the clank of turning wheels. The venting plumes of flammable gas from the governor machines pulsed orange light through the chamber. Huge whirling stacks of black metal projected through a web of gantries that led from the door. She paused for a second, looking at her shadow as it fell on the door she had just passed through. It was small and led to a spiral stair that led up to her sanctuary. It was the only way of reaching this chamber, and the iron door the only way in or out. She turned the key to the door over in her hands. A servitor clanked towards her. Dust and wear covered its machine components. It stopped, and a speaker set in its chest buzzed as it prepared to speak.
"I bear the seal and blood of my office," said Zelita, holding out an open hand. "Obey my command."
The servitor looked at her. Light pulsed in the cracked glass of its eye. Then it reached out and scratched a needle-tipped finger across her outstretched palm. Something clattered in its cranium, and then it bowed.
"What is your will?"
She looked at it for a long moment, feeling the words hovering just behind her lips. She thought of all the things she had done, and all the secrets she had kept, each of them weighing over the years more heavily than the chains that bent her back and dragged on her limbs. Through the grating beneath her feet, she could see the long drop down a pipeline shaft to a distant, molten glow.
"Was I right?" she asked.
The servitor tilted its head.
"I do not comprehend your command."
She smiled and shook her head.
"What is the point of all of this suffering, if it is not for something you know, for something greater? It has to be, doesn't it?"
The servitor buzzed and clanked with confusion. Zelita shook her head, then held up the key that would unlock the door out of the chamber, and dropped it over the edge of the gantry, down into the molten glow below.
"My command is to shut down the governance machinery. All of it."
"Compliance,"
said the servitor. Glavius IV-Row twisted as a hound-like thing made of darkness and dust lunged at him. He skittered back, and one of the mechadendrites on his back arched over his head. The beam of its neutron laser struck the creature and bored through it. Its strength might be powered by energies beyond rational analysis, but the dust of its body fused and melted in an eye blink. He swept the beam through the next monstrosity, feeling his power reserves drain. His machine limbs shivered. Warnings buzzed through his awareness. Paradoxes were swarming through his data systems. Parts of his system and consciousness were filling up with shrieks of corrupted data as reality bent and broke in the presence of the demons. He tried to step back as a cloud of things with wings and bladed mouths formed from the dust and air. The gears of his legs locked. Error data flooded him.
"All is pure in the machine," he muttered,
and dumped purge routines through his machine components. For a second, he blanked out and came back to awareness only just in time to lash an electro-wreathed hand through one of the flock of winged demons that had dived at him. Sparks arched up his arm. Inside his remaining flesh, he felt pain. The cathedral boiled with the sounds of conflict. Beyond the breach in the main doors they had entered through, his long-range sensors could detect body heat and vibration. There were people coming. Humans, or things that might be humans. Across the tenuous connection he still maintained with the monastery's limited machine spirits, he felt something shift, and then began to blare a warning.
"Judge Orsino,"
he spoke across the short-range vox. Behind him, the human called Claudia had shrunk back beside a pillar. Epicles had his back against the cold stone, his mouth moving, blood-stained sweat running down his face. The warning rose in pitch across the link to the monastery's systems.
"Judge Orsino,"
repeated Glavius Forro, shouting the words with all the power he could spare. Beside the next pillar in the avenue, Orsino flicked a glance at Glavius Forro as she fired a bolt into a billowing mass of feathers and forming faces. A ring of arbitrators remained around her, still firing. Covenant and Coleg had vanished behind a blur of dust through which flashes of light threw shadows.
"What?"
she shouted.
"I believe that there are a high volume of hostiles within a short distance of our location and closing."
"Noted,"
she replied. The judge paused to reload her pistol. Her braced limbs moved with clockwork slowness.
"And,"
he began. A figure came through the breach in the great door. It stood for a second, its red rags bloody and soot-stained. It raised its head and howled through the mask nailed to its face. Then it ran forwards. More came through the breach. Dust demons spiraled through the air towards them and ripped into them, coiling into their flesh, feeding on the blood as it fell.
"And,"
Glavius Forro forced himself to speak,
"I am receiving a warning across the machine link I have with the monastery's systems. The geothermal regulators beneath the complex are being shut down. Once that process is complete, a catastrophic volcanic event is inevitable and imminent."
"Can you stop the process?" she called.
Two of the arbitrators had now switched fire back towards the figures swarming through the breach in the cathedral doors.
"No," said Glavius Forro. "The progression of events is now inevitable."
Covenant reeled back, barely catching his balance as the shock of contact shuddered through his sword.
"I will die here," he thought.
The sickle blade that had caught his blow blurred towards him, moaning, dragging molten light with it. Its curve was a half a meter wide, its edge a notched razor. In his psychic senses, it shrieked hunger and pain, babbling as the sigil stamped into its metal burned.
"Here is where I fail for the last time."
The figure wielding the blade was tall, stripped to the waist, and hugely muscled. Scars and brands crisscrossed his skin, blending divinity and blasphemy. Blood and fire wept from the marks on his hands and arms. He blurred as he moved, jerking like a drawn image on the margins of the flicked pages of a book. Covenant could feel cold fury and agony and control radiating from the man, rippling through the warp as reality distorted around the blade. The psi cannon on his shoulder spun and fired three times. The sickle blade sliced through space, and the rounds were exploding against the tainted metal, the demon within it howling in pain. Fresh wounds opened on the scarred man's arms. Covenant cut, sword slicing straight down. The sickle rose, but it was slower, wounded. For a second, just a smile of metal. Covenant drove all his strength into the blow. Lightning flared as the two weapons met again, and the sword bit into the sickle. Blood and molten metal fell from the wounded weapon, but it did not break, and now the scarred man was coming forward, spinning the sickle low under Covenant's guard, and the swords clashed again. The Wanderer was watching,
his face showing pain, but his movements unhurried. Covenant met the eyes, and through them saw a flash of triumph and of pity in that look.
"You are nothing, understand?"
The voice of memory rose in Covenant as he parried another blow of the sickle.
"Yes, Prefect,"
said the boy in grey, kneeling on the floor.
"Only the Emperor is real. Only duty matters. And you..."
The whip lashed across the boy's raised hands. He swallowed the pain, but felt tears form at the corners of his eyes.
"You are too weak to be true, and too flawed to be faithful."
And the whip lashed down again.
"No!"
The thought rose through him, past the doubt.
"No!"
And the word was an echo of unspoken rage. The rage caught his thoughts and echoed out through the warp. Force ripped from him. The scarred man faltered, scars, tattoos, and brands kindling with cold light. Bullets blurred in from behind Covenant.
"Get back, my lord!"
Coleg's dry shout rose above the din. The scarred man's flesh burst as rounds tore through muscle. He fell, the blade twisting in his hand. Covenant's psi-cannon roared instinctively, and he was going forwards, his muscles pulling the edge of his sword down onto the fallen figure's neck. The scarred man gasped a silent scream and twisted away, blink-fast. Ashen blood drew back into bullet wounds, scars split and spread. Covenant tried to turn, to pull the killing blow around to meet the sickle, but it was already sliding past his guard, and he could feel the hunger at its core hissing in anticipation. The psi cannon on his shoulder clattered on an empty chamber as his mind willed it to fire.
"What do they call you here?"
Argento had asked in the cell in the Scola.
0137 Delta,
he had answered, looking up into the Inquisitor's eyes.
"A name for the past, not the future. You shall be called Covenant."
He rammed his will out at the scarred man, but felt the power drain into the sickle. Time was a slow creep from instant to instant. Sound had vanished from his ears.
"What is the only thing that is worse than betrayal?"
"Failure,"
he had answered. His master had smiled.
"Quite right, too, boy."
"But I have failed," he thought, and saw his own pale face in the scarred man's eyes as the sickle slid through the last breath of air. The scarred man vanished, flesh and bone blasted to ash. The sickle dropped to the floor, twisting as it fell, and then folding and crumpling, the metal glowing with heat as the demon bound within screamed. Covenant stumbled, cinders stinging his eyes, as above and around him the conjured demons howled like jackals. Memnon turned, panic on his once calm face. A figure walked from a shadowed door. The robes were burning from him, but the features of Abbot Iacto could still be seen on its mask of cracked skin. Flames haloed it, black smoke cloaked it, and its eyes were suns. The floor cracked under its feet. Slabs of stone peeled up into the air. The pillars of the cathedral groaned and shifted. A demon the size of a tank and shaped like a skinned dog leapt forward with a hooting cry. The burning figure turned its head, and the demon came apart. False muscle and bone unwound into nothing, and the thing's shriek drained into silence. The sounds of battle faded with the figure's slow, measured steps as it came on. Covenant was still, staring at the advancing figure. Inside his head, Memnon could feel thoughts and emotions draining away, burning from his soul and pulling into the golden vortex of the advancing figure.
"You have to kill it!"
he shouted. Covenant looked around. Memnon shook his head.
"You do not understand. It is not time. This is not..."
And the burning figure looked at him then, and the burning eyes met his. His eyes burst and boiled. He felt his heart stop. Blood went still in his veins. Muscles froze. He was lifting from the ground, feeling the substance of his being pull apart as something vast reached into his mind, and he felt his thoughts pull apart as countless voices screamed in his skull. The last breath in his lungs hissed from his throat, catching the last word that he would speak in this world.
"Emperor," he said.
Covenant saw the Wanderer dissolve into smoke. The haloed figure was still walking forwards. He could hear shouts and the sounds of battle, close but far away. His sword was heavy in his hand. The Wanderer's last words rolled through him. He saw golden and silver faces hanging on a wall, saw the tools spin as they sculpted the mask of an enemy or of a martyr. He thought of Argento, of him sighing and putting his hand on his shoulder.
"You choose. That is what we do. We choose between madness and insanity, between darkness and deeper night. We choose when the only thing worse than what we must do is making no choice at all."
The burning figure stopped. Covenant could feel the heat through his armor. He did not look at it. He did not move.
"I,"
came a voice in his head, like the blast of a furnace.
"I cannot see."
He looked up. The burning figure swayed. The light in its eyes guttered. Covenant took a step forwards. Stone and ash began to drop to the floor, exploding into dust. Someone was at his shoulder, pulling him back, and he could hear voices he recognized. He reached the figure as it struck the floor. Charred skin split. He dropped to his knees beside it. A blackened hand rose and grasped air.
"Please," said a human voice. Ember fires flared in the pits of Abbot Iacto's eyes. "Did it matter?"
The charred body convulsed, cracks spreading across the floor beneath it.
"Covenant!"
called Orsino's voice from just next to him, another hand on his shoulder, pulling him. He shrugged free and stood.
"I cannot,"
rasped a voice that was many voices, all fading into the distance.
"I must."
He could hear shouting, gunfire close by. His sword was in his hands, the edge lit with lightning.
"Forgive me," Covenant said.
Zelita felt the heat rise up the shaft to meet her. She knelt on the grating. Around her, the governor machines had started to vibrate. Pipes blew out in clouds of steam. Alarm bells clanged. Pain was growing in her skin where it touched the metal gantry floor.
"For my sins, forgive me," she said,
and gasped for breath. The reek of sulfur rose. Beneath her, the distant glow of magma raced up towards her, like the exhalation of a tortured god.
"No,"
gasped Joseph.
"No, not yet."
He bit down on his own tongue, felt pain, and tasted blood. He pushed up, feeling the pain rise to swallow him, and forcing it down.
"If,"
he gasped aloud,
"if ever I served you truly, grant me this time."
He felt Agatha's hand steady him. He was weeping, he knew, tears freezing on his cheeks amongst the snowflakes. He rose, swaying, feeling the ground pull him back into its embrace, and knowing that if he yielded, he would never rise again. The monastery loomed above him, lit by growing fires blurred by snow and smoke.
"We must,"
he began, but never finished the words. Fire roared up into the dark, punching a fist of burning gas and molten rock towards the heavens. Blocks of stone rose like flecks of dust. Snow flashed to steam as it fell. 6 seconds later, the shockwave swept down and blew Joseph back off his feet as he stared, open-mouthed, at the inferno. Epilogue. The sorceress stood in the freezing twilight beside the black mirror of water. The sun had sunk behind the bones of the dead hives, and bruise-like shadows were strangling the last of the daylight. Sparks of pain twitched up her spine as she shifted her weight on her bionic legs. Beneath the folds of silk and crinoline, she moved on sprung arcs of black carbon and brass. The fiber bundles were still meshing with her nervous system,
and moments of both minor and extreme pain were her constant companion. It was one of the smallest prices she had paid in her service to humanity, though perhaps one of the least easy to put aside. She waited. The pain passed. She held her thoughts still. The quiet of the dead temple seeped into her. The place had been burned and forgotten long before the world around it had risen in grace, and then slumped back into techno-barbarism. Ancient soot darkened its pillows and floors, and the bones of its priests now clung to the corners as dust. It was a place that mattered only if you knew what it had been, and had the will to put its ghosts to use. The sorceress bent her head and looked down at the dim reflection in the pool of water at her feet. A black silk hood framed her face. Kohl rimmed her eyes, and painted letters, death marks in the language of the local clans, wound over her cheeks and chin. She closed her eyes, focused her will, and breathed the word into the cold air. She opened her eyes. A face was looking up at her from the black water, but it was no longer hers.
"You have read the auguries?" she asked.
"Of course," said the High Priest, his voice seeming to come like a distant echo in the air.
"Not what we expected," said the sorceress.
"The presence of the Pilgrims of Hate was unusual. Their creed was supposed to be confined to Nex and Dameron. I thought you kept their seed to those worlds, but I suppose the storm winds rise and fire spreads where it will."
The sorceress kept her silence for a lengthening moment. "The Wanderer is a bad loss," she said at last.
"Is he?" asked the High Priest.
"His skills, commitment, and insight
can be replaced, or bettered, and besides, he performed his function. The prospect fell short of incarnation, at least in whole."
"Only just."
"Indeed, but in matters of salvation, the margins of success are always narrow."
"As you say."
"There is still the question of why this occurred again on Dominicus."
"You gave an answer to Memnon when he asked. It is a crucible of fate. Those were your words. Did you lie?"
A laugh shivered through the temple. "No, but after the loss of revelation, I just thought it was done. The two went together, child and place. That another prospect should arise there, after all this time. For a while I wondered if somehow she was still there."
The High Priest lapsed into a silence which the sorceress did not fill.
"The next stage is ready?" he asked at last.
"Yes."
"You have identified a vessel?"
"Yes."
A shadow of a smile on the dark water. "You were always my best student," said the High Priest, "but terrible at hiding your emotions."
"Don't patronize me," she snarled. The water rippled again.
"We do what is needed, remember that," he said. "Not just what is necessary, but what is needed if humanity is going to survive the night that comes. You saw that. That is why you are here."
"Covenant."
"Yes. An opportunity that is no more. At least it simplifies matters."
"Do you not?"
She stopped herself. For an instant, her focus had slipped. Ripples had blurred the reflected image. Then she had brought her emotions back under control. "Do I not feel sorrow?" the High Priest asked. "Sorrow is a blanket we give to children."
She was silent for a second. "As you say," she replied.
The face in the water was still for a moment, the shadow of its eyes staring up at her gaze. "We shall speak again soon," he said, at last. "Farewell, for now."
the reflection cleared from the black water, and a second later it began to boil and steam. Inquisitor Idris looked up at the last scraps of light fading behind the metal peaks in the distance.
"Farewell,
for now," she said to the silence, and then turned and walked away into the twilight. In the pool, the water that had held the face of Inquisitor Argento continued to boil into vapor and air. That was Incarnation, The Horusian Wars by John French, read by John Banks. This recording is copyrighted to Games Workshop 2018.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.